I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up tomorrow on the program, Tuesday, we got from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor. Also, Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Haas, Mac Ann from Alabama's 3rd Congressional District. Congressman Mike Rogers, good friend. Hopefully to get these guys on in our congressional delegation a little bit more. And more so, you'll want to tune in for that. Joining us now, our Monday guest, always a pleasure to introduce him, State Representative Matt Simpson joins us in studio. Representative, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Glad to be back in studio.
Hey, thanks for coming in. I know it's getting guests in studio. You can always have it seems like a better interaction than over the phone, because that interpersonal, you're not stepping over each other's words or whatever, but I'm glad you could make it in.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm glad to be a friend of yours and to have your station, have you down here in Mobile and broadcasting in our area. It's really good to have this type of talk in our area. I'm appreciative of everything Sean's done, and to have you in addition to it, it really grows our voice statewide.
Yeah, that's the hope here, to kind of close in that gulf between Mobile and Montgomery and do at least make people more aware of what's going on. That's a very lofty aspiration, but we're going to try. But the good news is I made it into the second week without being fired is the most important detail. So don't take the Jeff Porch Show for granted just yet. We still got to work our way in. Matt, let's talk about college football season. A lot of these leagues looking like they're already packed 12 or Big Ten, or they're not looking like they're going to happen. What do you make of all of this?
It's heartbreaking for these kids. You're 18 to 22, and let's preface everything I'm saying with the understanding that the COVID is real. It is not a hoax. There is a danger to this community in here. But these 18 to 22-year-old kids are not the kids that are going to be affected by it. They're not going to be the ones that are at risk. They're not going to be the ones that are in danger of having tremendous health loss by what they do. So to tell them, you can't play this year. You have to take a year on the side for something that's probably not going to affect you is rough. You know, you hear some of these comments made, and they have a limited time frame from the ability that they can earn their money and their potential to play. You see what Joe Burrow tweets, and he says, if this would have happened last year, I might be looking for a job. And he's absolutely right. He was not on anybody's radar at the beginning of last year. Goes out, has a tremendous season, Heisman Trophy winner, number one overall pick. And he's a late-round draft pick without a year last year. So there are people that are going to lose their opportunity to show for those potential employers what they can do, and that's tough to hear.
Well, let's bring it home. I talk to these guys in these college town communities, over to Tuscaloosa. They're no football. There are businesses that rely on that income, the hotels, the restaurants. They're already hit hard. They're already hit hard by not having students there. With no football season, it becomes more of a burden. And we're not really, I get, let's put the kids first or whatever. But there's going to be other unintended consequences from this decision.
Completely. Those 7 weekends a year in Tuscaloosa, you've heard Maddox say that that's $200 million around that ballpark from what the effect to the city that they get. It's not just that. It's everything that goes with it. These Saturdays in the South, how have you spent your Labor Day weekend? Everybody spends their Labor Day weekend watching college football. That's the biggest weekend of college football. And you're going to have a completely different atmosphere than when we come in September or October if we don't have those games. It's just not that. It's tough to be prepared for. I'm hopeful that the SEC can figure this out, can do this in a manner that they can understand and say, we'll go forward, we'll do what we have, and we'll just play the games that we have. It probably won't be with much of an attendance. I've heard the 20%. I'm not high enough on the radar to have to worry about. I'm not in that 20% figure. But students won't be able to attend these games. That's a big loss to them. You know, your freshman or your senior year, you're coming in and you're excited about football, and you can't go watch a football game. You have to watch it on TV like everybody else. It's sad. There's a fear of what's going on, and I don't think it's necessarily a fear of what happens to these kids. I think it's a fear of how is the media going to portray what happens if there's a breakout or if there's something, if we have it.
It's the PR hit. You know, they're not concerned about the profound consequences beyond just the beyond, you know, what happens tomorrow or whatever. You know, there's other components. There's other things going on, but they're not thinking about the other ways that college football has tentacles and affects other things. But these college presidents, having spent time with working in media in college, they're just terrified, unnecessarily, irrationally terrified of what the media may do or say about their institution. I think that's driving this decision.
If you look at, if they're just worried about the health of the players, if that's all that they're focused on is worried about the health of the players, I'm an Alabama grad, Alabama fan, I'll speak on Alabama, they get better nutrition and medical care, and they are under the microscope of what goes on, everything that goes into their body, everything their body does. They are under all kinds of care in Tuscaloosa, that if they are not in Tuscaloosa, if they're at home, if they're, you know, they don't have access to the same food, the same meal level that that Tuscaloosa has. I don't have access to that level of food, so it's not.
But they get the best of the best, the engineered, highly nutritional, foods and diets and cooks and with the expertise and all of that.
And they're protected from the medical care to be able to say, hey, if you have something, go here, and you have doctors that are willing to jump on and go through this. If you're just looking out for the care of those players, of those individuals, they're much better off in Tuscaloosa than they would be at home.
It's just like with anything. It's like when the beaches open back up, or these lakes, the bars, and the real thing, the real motivation is, and we don't want to be on camera showing a bunch of college students together watching a football game, enjoying life, because that's a way to spread COVID-19. We need to shy away from that, and I think that's a bad way to base any kind of decision making on. I think perhaps if some of these schools go down this road, particularly if they're taxpayer institutions, do they have some kind of, should they explain the science behind their decision or the methodology they put in place, because there's a lot of other things this will impact.
There will. They've got the great shadow of being able to say, oh, well, the SEC called it. It's not, so the institution won't have to answer for it. They can just say, well, the SEC canceled the games or whatever.
Right.
I'm hopeful that the SEC won't. I'm hopeful that the problem that you have with so much of what you're discussing, and it's been pretty much every topic you've talked about today, there's a lack of trust. There's a lack of trust from the people to the institutions to the coverage, the lack of trust to be able to say, are you doing this for the right reasons, or are you doing this for a political spin? Or are you doing this for coverage? Are you doing this because you have an agenda on what you're
doing? You want a Democrat to win. You want to expand the power of the state. You don't. You're not doing this because it's simply the right thing to do, and you believe that there are the other pressures that are motivating these decisions.
And it's how stories are covered. It's how stories, you know, I can, as in politics, I can tell you a lot of people don't trust politicians, and that's fine. They should not trust their politicians. They should have a trust but verify deal where they're saying, you have to prove to me you're doing the right thing for the right reasons. But you see how stories are spinned, and you see how the story comes off. And it's just, it's simple of being like, on the radio this morning, they start talking about how great of a response New York has done, and New York is doing this.
Terrible.
New York is this model of response to how to handle their coronavirus, and they've laughed at Florida, they've laughed at all these other states, and it's like, you can't really be honest and tell the public, hey, New York is this shining golden star on how to do the coronavirus response. You can't do that when you have those type of numbers and those type of response. But the spin is what the spin is, and they want to make it. They want to make a pitch and say, "Hey, look, this governor of New York, he's really doing an outstanding job, regardless of the facts, regardless of the numbers. And look how bad the Florida governor is doing. Look, it's just, it's all political, and nobody trusts media, nobody trusts the politicians, nobody trusts anything going on. And it comes a point where you just turn it off. At some point, the people just say, I'm tired of listening to this. I'm tired of listening to either CNN, Fox News, whichever side you want to pick on it. You just say, I'm tired of listening to the slant that goes with this.
And they just give up.
And you just give up, and nobody knows anything.
But the thing is, the phenomenon here, yes, everything is hyper-partisan or hyper-politicized, in some cases where these decisions are being made, they're not even offering the explanation. It's an unwillingness to even do that. Take the governor of Michigan, for example. I don't have to explain myself to you. I'm the governor. I was elected. This is what we're doing. You don't like it? Tough. And that certainly will draw some kind of backlash, it seems.
It will. It you have to answer to the people. Regardless of what role you're in, regardless of what title you have, you're not a king. That we don't have a king in where we live. So you have to answer to the people for what you've done. There's checks and balances set up in our government, checks and balances over the executive branch, over the legislative branch, and over the judicial branch to make sure that they work together for our accomplishments of our state to move things forward. We've got to work together. We can't just draw a line in the sand and say, I'm powerful, I know everything, take what I give you, and that's what you're going to have to do.
Let them eat cake or what. It's just a flippancy about it. But in some ways, I don't even think that the problem isn't necessarily that they're unwilling because, well, they have this set of data and this set of information, and they're just too lazy to give it to the public. They don't know. They're just trying to follow the leader. This is what the media tell us. This is what CDC says or Dr. Fauci or whatever you want to put out in front of there, that they are using that as like a shield in some ways and not really having to do their homework or give you, a justifiable reason for why they did what they did.
Right. And nobody knows, Fauci, nobody knows what's going on with this virus. This virus has mutated. This virus was not expected. This virus came into this country, and it kind of, still to this day, nobody knows what you're going to have. The only way that you actually want to, that you could possibly get rid of this virus is if you lock people in their rooms for 21 days, and then the virus would go away. We're America. We don't do that. A lot of people don't have the ability to say, I'm not going to the grocery store for 3 weeks and can store this amount of food. I can pay for this amount of food to stay in the house for 3 weeks. We're not going to do that. We're not going to just say, I'm not going to the grocery store. I'm not going to the doctor. I'm not going to the gas station. I'm not doing anything for 3 weeks but just being holed up in my room. That is really the only way you can stop this virus.
Just totally eradicate it. But even then, who knows, right?
Right.
I mean, people still interact with their families. How long does it? There's all of these unknowns about it. But we have to act like whatever the idea of the day, be it a mask, be it a shutdown, whatever people are throwing at it, you don't dare question it because then you're a science denier. But the thing that we're really lacking is in a lot of these decisions are so cost benefit analysis that and then you can't do an objective survey of, well, the shutdown or whatever. There's this cost to doing it. You have to wipe that from the slate and just do what you're told.
And part of this, it goes back to the Constitution, Jeff, and we've had this conversation before, but there is no clause in the Bill of Rights that says does not apply in case of emergency. It just doesn't work that way. That's what you go to when your principles are. The people have the right to function and live free and long-term lives. That's what this nation was built on, and that's what it's founded on. And when you start impeding those rights because of this emergency or this emergency or this emergency, well, what happens the next time? What happens down the future? What happens when there's another virus? Or what happens when the flu? How bad are you going to let other things get to when you...
Or let's say it's something we have political disagreements on, but whoever's in charge thinks this is a national crisis, so we're going to say global warming, we're shutting everything down. We've done it before. There's a precedent here, and the courts have ruled it's legal, so we're going to apply that precedent to something that's highly controversial and highly politicized. And then, I mean, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but you could totally see using that's a logical destination for where this is being handled right now.
I think you're exactly right. I think a lot of the powers that were given to the executive branch were given over in the 50s, and these current laws that allow this executive power to make these executive amendments in times of emergency and do these orders were created in the 1950s. What they're worried about is a nuclear attack. What
right.
happens if a nuclear bomb hits? We got to make sure that the state can function and the governor can have these opportunities to govern and lead us in the right direction. I don't think in 1955 they're thinking about a virus and how these powers are going to be applied in a virus. And so that is a slippery slope that we are going down to say, okay, we've gone from nuclear weapons to now we're saying there's a virus to what happens next time. You're exactly right. How far down do you have And I'm not saying it's this governor. I'm not saying that, you know, it's this governor's office or anything.
But it's just the trend of the executive branch in general to accumulate that power. But to have now they have that card. Whereas 5 years ago, if we're talking about what was going to happen in 2020 and 2015, and I say to you, governor's going to shut down the whole state. How? I mean, it is legally dubious to do so, but just because that is that's what other states are doing and it's working in other places, well, we got to do it too, and maybe we can get through this and be all together or something like that. Anyway, let's take a time out. We'll get back and we'll wrap it all up. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.
Jack Daniel's whiskey at 1.5. It's how the folks around here have been living their lives.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Monday to you. Thank you for tuning in and staying tuned throughout the broadcast today. Coming up tomorrow on the program from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor will be with us, Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Hossback, and from Alabama's 3rd Congressional District, Congressman Mike Rogers will be with us. As also another jam-packed show for you tomorrow. Make sure that you tune in. Still in studio with us, our Monday guest, State Representative Matt Sisson. Got just a few moments here left with you here. Let's talk about schools reopening in some places. We talked about this last week a little bit, but what are your thoughts on that direction, that progress?
I'm just very thankful for the teachers. There's a lot of teachers that are going back to this that do fit in that age range, that do fit in that at-risk category. And for them to go forward and say, you know what, I'm going to go because it's a calling to me and it means something to me to be with my students and to be there for my students. And for them to put themselves at risk to come in there, and we understand COVID is going to happen. There will be infections. There will be kids that have it. There will be kids that pass it along. There will be teachers that get it. For them to put that on and understand, I'm going to do this for what I think is my calling. I really appreciate it for them. I've got two kids in public school. They're starting back Wednesday. They're going to the building. I want to thank the teachers for being there for them. You know, instead of just saying, we're not going to come in, we're going to strike, we're going to make sure that we don't show up for the students or we cause more harm than good, that's not what's happened. That's not what's going on down here. I'm very thankful for them. There are teachers. I had lunch and breakfast with a couple of teachers the other day, and they talked about how their work process has changed tremendously. It's not them just teaching their lesson anymore, where you just get up in front of the students and you teach your lesson, then you go home and grade your papers. It's not that anymore. Now you have to load your lesson into a program so the virtual students can see your lesson beforehand. So
it's a lot of extra work.
It's about triple is what they're telling us. It's just triple the work that they have to do because they have to go in, load their lesson in, make sure that they do all the virtual stuff on top of what they're doing for their normal students in school, and it's difficult on them, and it's a difficult process for them. But for them to do that work and to put that aside and say, I'm going to do triple the work, I'm going to do what I need to do to get sure to make this education happen, I'm very grateful for our teachers standing up on the front lines and going forward and doing that.
Yeah, and you know, there's pushback from the teachers union. They're not really thrilled with the idea, the prospect of opening schools back. They want across the board virtual education. It doesn't seem realistic because in Alabama, well, anywhere, I suppose, schools do a lot more than just education. I mean, they play a function in the community, the nutrition aspects, but also, like, it serves as a place for kids to go while their parents work, perhaps. There's a lot of other things that those institutions, elementary, middle, junior high, high school, or intermediate school, whatever you want to call it, that they do, the function they perform in the community.
Absolutely. I've got this background as far as when I was a prosecutor for 4 of those years, I was the child victims prosecutor. And kids don't have an outlet. If they're going home, if they're being stuck inside a home right now with an abuser, there's nobody they can talk to. There's no teacher, there's no counselor, there's no one they can do to get escape from that danger that they're in and that situation that they're currently suffering from. So all they can do is just experience it and have to go through that with no outlet of any hope, any chance of help. So schools serve so much more of a function. It's not just A's and B's and arithmetic and the reading, writing, arithmetic that you used to talk about. It's socially. How can they help people? How do they grow? How do they learn? How do they get together with their friends and have these aspects to grow their emotional quotient as well as their intellectual quotient? We've got to work on all that.
And I still maintain that there is no possible way that virtual schooling will work at a certain age. That kids, I remember when I was in second and third grade, I couldn't even sit still at a desk, sitting still in front of a computer. So you kid, I'm playing my Legos. I ain't messing with that.
Right. And you learned, the only thing you learn how to do in some of those situations is you learn how to take a test. You learn how to read a question and eliminate certain multiple choices and you pick that question. You don't learn the object of what you're trying to advance to. That way you can learn on this and build from it and next year be prepared for what you want to do for the next year. You're only learning how to take a test.
You need that adult supervision. You need to learn. I mean, it's like more than just learning the things you learn in a school book, but it's also learning that there's rules and you have to do this and you have to act a certain way.
Exactly.
Matt, we got to leave it there. Out of time, but thank you for coming in. We'll do it again next week. Guys, I got to get out of here. You want to stay tuned for Midday Mobile with the one and only Sean Sullivan. This has been the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.